Today's episode, North Carolina saber-rattling at the ACC. The Pac-2 will be on the CW. Hilarity ensues. Can a radio host become a college basketball coach? And you guys ate too much damn shrimp.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Someone's eyeing the pool boy right now, and he's wearing an SEC logo.
Russ Dellinger.
One, and then two, and then the CW logo.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Took too much of their shrimp, and now look. Now you got no shrimp.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and the ACC, the Atlantic Coast Conference, which has outposts on the Pacific Ocean and deep in the heart of Texas now, having their spring meetings. And I guess everything was booked up and down the East Coast and in deep in the heart of Texas and the Bay Area, because the only spot that they could find was the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island, where they could all get together and talk about how horrible everything is going. How they don't have enough money.
Everything's fine in the league.
How they don't have enough prestige. The Ritz-Carlton. This is the I mean, bless you. The lack of awareness sometimes.
On principle alone, Florida State and Clemson should have said, since we're making so little money, we need to do this at the Budgetel in Statesboro, Georgia.
Yeah.
You know?
It's only $1,000 a night, Dan.
It's pretty good. Let me take a look at this place. Who gets the presidential
suite? It's nice. It's very nice. I'm holed up here in their business office, their little room in there. They have a business office. It's very nice.
Yeah. Not bad. Let's see. Immerse yourself in nature at our Amelia Island Resort, a barrier island sanctuary of nature nestled along 13 miles of immaculate shorelines. Now, this is
an island that's protecting the mainland from Hurricane SEC. Is that it?
Yeah. we're going to burn the ship down.
Yeah.
I will say they are relocating this event. It's been here, I think, for like over 20 years, 25 years, and they are moving the event. In a couple of years, it will move to Charlotte, I believe, just like the headquarters.
There you go. Charlotte Airport Marriott, baby. Yeah. Let's have a meeting.
I don't think it's going to be in the Airport Marriott, but yeah.
Anyway, here in amateur athletics, as the world spins, they need this, because this will help the perception with the selection committee in college football, so that a 13-0 ACC champion that just happens to lose its quarterback is no longer punished and kept out of the playoff, which is a real and, I believe, fair thing to be complaining about or addressing. In some ways, at this meeting. Now, of course, we no longer have this problem because they have finally expanded the playoff, which, if the ACC had gone along with at a previous date, would have been done last year, and Florida State would have not been left out of the playoff. But I digress. History is tough. History is tough. But there is the discussion that, look, we need to be considered, and for a lot of reasons, that this is a great football league. And great football can be played here, and that would spur both investment and business deals and maybe even television broadcasts and fans, and maybe appease Florida State and Clemson, who are currently in litigation, and North Carolina, which has its trustees, which we'll get to, saying, hey, we need to get to a league that has more money because we're running an athletic budget deficit. That's kind of where we're at. It's an ACC trying to stand up for itself and saying, hey, look, we're as great. The Amelia Island Ritz is better than Destin. It's better than what goes on in Destin in the SEC. We went 6-4 against the SEC. Yes, Jordan Travis got hurt. And yes, Tate Rodemaker got hurt. And yes, Brock Glenn had to come in for Florida State as the third stringer. And yeah, you only went 8 for 21 for 55 yards and took 4 sacks, but he wouldn't have played in the playoff, and we should have had Alabama spot, and this is all garbage, even though it's been solved. Is that kind of the mood? There's a little bit of a little chest out amongst all their troubles, or are they just hanging out at the spa?
There's actually not a lot of spa going on here, man. They shove like a lot in 2 days here. They meet from morning to night kind of thing, and they have a little reception at night, maybe dinners, but a lot of meetings. I think certainly the first day that this started, Monday, is the morning that the UNC Board of Trustees members aired their grievances, you might say, and criticized publicly Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham in the state at the athletic department in, you know, approve the launching of some kind of inquiry and audit into the department and all this. So that all happened day one. And a few of us caught Bubba Cunningham in the hallway. And he at least claimed early on he really had not seen, because they had been in meetings, so he had not seen all this stuff come out. So a few of us kind of informed him of what his Board of Trustees members said. And he was approached, I believe, yesterday and Tuesday, a day after, and not saying much, as you might gather. But, you know, I think that was kind of the buzz of the first couple of days is kind of, here comes North Carolina. They're the next in line behind Florida State and Clemson, it appears, to want to head out of the exit here and out of the ACC. So that's been probably the overwhelming buzz here. And if Florida State and Clemson get out and leave in some way, I think the big question right then is, can the league do enough to keep the kind of the crown jewel in a way of the University of North Carolina? And I think in part that was answered Monday with the Board of Trustees statements. And the answer is probably not, it sounds like, because they feel like they need to leave the conference as well. So there's just a lot of question marks. It's weird here seeing the Florida State in Clemson's in the hotel and then seeing SMU and Stanford and Cal in the hotel at meetings. It's pretty bizarre, but the whole thing is fairly indicative, I feel like, of college athletics. You've got a couple of very unruly members ready to leave and have been public criticizing the conference. And then you have these new programs that really have nothing to do with anyone else in the league that are here in their first meeting. So it's kind of indicative of the whole situation that's going on in college sports right now.
Before I get to you, Pat, let me update the details of what Ross was talking about, because this entire trouble in paradise here at Amelia Island, Ritz-Carlton, it's like a couple about to go for divorce, giving one last, let's take a weekend, a romantic weekend away at our $1,000 a night place. And instead, all they're doing is scrapping, fighting, passive aggressiveness, no one, you know, cold shoulders, and someone's eyeing the pool boy. So not necessarily going. Could be him, could be her. I don't care. Someone's eyeing the pool boy right now, and he's wearing an SEC logo. He's wearing a Big Ten logo. Okay, so UNC had a deficit in their budget this year, fairly significant. You know, they have a big athletic department, but 10% budget deficit. They already receive $8 million in student fees and another $6.8 million in either direct or indirect institutional support to try to cover costs at North Carolina. And trustee David Boliak straight up saying he wants UNC, and the deficit sends out, so it could be $100 million over the next, I don't know how many years. Dave Boliak, he is a trustee. He is Bubba Cunningham's boss. He's everyone's boss, the trustees. He is advocating UNC joins a more higher revenue league, namely SEC or Big Ten. I am advocating for that. That's what we need to do. We need to do everything we can to get there. Or the alternative is the ACC is going to have to reconstruct itself. I think all options are on the table. It's nice that he thinks all options are on the table. The ACC reconstructing itself. That means more money is going to Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and maybe Miami. I don't know. Is there a fourth team that gets more money and less for everybody else? Now, Cal, Stanford, and SMU, they're already on budget programs. I don't think SMU's getting anything. But you could also say we're cutting them out. Boston College, Syracuse, some of these others, Wake even. I mean, some of these are founding members. Maybe they got to take less to placate more, get these guys up. That's kind of what he's talking about. John Pryor, who is the chairman of the Board of Trustees, the conference is not acting as if it represents the best interests of the member schools, including the top tier of those schools, Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, Pryor said. This is all from excellent reporting by Brian Murphy at WRAL, who covers sports in the Triangle. Great reporter, always has been. He's covered Boise State and everything. This is Pryor, the chair of the Board of Trustees. Instead, it is acting at the expense of those schools to prop up the bottom tier of the conference in a way that I think is a gross abdication of responsibility. And I lay that at the feet of the commissioner. So there's a shot at Jim Phillips. The trustees are making noise. And here's why this is a little bit different than Clemson and South Carolina and Florida State. Clemson and Florida State, when you talk to the SEC behind the scenes, you talk to the Big Ten behind the scenes, those leagues are not rushing to say we want them. They already have school. The Big Ten may not want either of them. They're not their first choices as expansion. The SEC already has South Carolina and Florida in those two states. Do they want those two programs? It's not certain. Everybody wants North Carolina. If North Carolina could get out of the ACC deal, it would have an invitation to the Big Ten immediately. It would have an invitation to the SEC, I believe, immediately, if only to stop. And the Big Ten's ultimate dream is either take North Carolina and Virginia or take North Carolina and tell Notre Dame it's now or never. Because your sweetheart ACC scheduling deal is going down. So when the UNC trustees are saying, we aren't making enough money, North freaking Carolina is not making enough money. They got 20 national championships in like the last 10 years. Like, this is North Carolina. This isn't, and then SMU saying we can't do it this way. They got options. So that is what Ross was alluding to. And that's why I think it's got to be some concern. Pat, your thought on all of this ACC spin?
No, this is probably the biggest sign of trouble yet, beyond the very obvious sign of trouble when your league members are suing the league in Florida State and Clemson. But yeah, North Carolina is the most desirable property in college sports outside of Notre Dame, and already currently that doesn't already reside in the Big Ten or the SEC. And so if the trustees at Carolina are now reaching that point of like, we can't do this anymore, That's a five alarm signal, I would think, in the ACC offices. And, you know, I think that this obviously has been kind of a slow build for a while now. And Florida State was the meat shield. They took all the bullets last year, and then Clemson just kind of slid in after them in the let's sue to get out game. But there's other schools, obviously, that have been weighing options. That, you know, if you go back a year ago, there was literally half the league, seven members met to kind of decide what they could and couldn't do. And now if Carolina's out there and publicly talking about this, and we'll see if this is just a trustee or two, or if this is the actual will of the Board of Trustees and they can gather the support of the school president and the athletic director, then we really have something there. But it does not shock me. I wrote a long Jim Phillips story. It was actually in the SI, the magazine, in March, and it published online here this week. And it was largely about Jim Phillips and what he's trying to hold together there. But I talked to Mike Krzyzewski, and one of his comments that, you know, I'll just read the comment and you guys can decide, especially in the context of what we've been discussing here, who he might have been talking about. Said, talking about Phillips, said he's a team player. His values as a leader are needed, but it's a really tough time. People have not been forthright in expressing their agendas. They have hidden agendas. Fans would be amazed by all the stuff that is secretly happening in our conference. It finally came to fruition with Florida State, but Florida State's not the only one looking at different things. It's a hell of a job right now. It's a wow time. Not a wow like great. It's a wow like what the hell are we going to do? Durham is 8 miles from Chapel Hill. That's all I'll say.
Saying
that. By the way, that
there is some Coach K casting aspersions at the Tar Heels. What? Go ahead, Ross.
Great. That was a great story, Pat. And it really described, I think, the situation, the unenviable situation that Jim Phillips, Mr. Nice Guy, is faced with. And there are, as you kind of outlined in that story, there are, I think, people around college athletics and in his own room, AD room, that believe that Jim's approach is not one that will get the ACC through this. You know, others certainly disagree, but it's just the position that he's been thrust in really since he kind of got the job. And of course didn't get the Big Ten job, commissioner job, is pretty wild. And he's dealing with, a similar situation. I think there's fear within the league that the ACC situation will end like the Pac-12. And it does, especially with the latest North Carolina stuff. You could see why that people would believe that. I think there's a real possibility that eventually happens. And so how do you avoid that? I think one way is what happened in the fall. They went out, and they got three extra members, because at least you can have the numbers. If others leave, you can have the numbers. And the other way is exactly what some of those trustees talked about, the uneven distribution of wealth in the league. We're going to see the ACC implement success initiatives, which is something pushed by the Florida States and the Clemsons when it comes to football success. Basically, those who are more successful in football, bowl game, top 25, CFP entrance, will get more money from the distribution from the league. So that's just a step in the direction of an uneven distribution to those power schools to kind of appease them. Can they do enough, to keep, if Florida State and Clemson are already in a way gone, can they hold enough programs, specifically North Carolina, by doing these things? It'll be interesting, but it's not a great position that Mr. Phillips is in.
Lessons learned from conference realignment history. If you are these other schools that are not going to be in that, you're not North Carolina, you're not Clemson, you're not Florida State, I would say Miami's going to say, we got to be in this. We're still Miami. We don't have a fan base, but we got a great market, and we may have a very good team. It's interesting to me, too, just a quick aside. It's a little like the Pac-12, where they were waiting and waiting for all the teams to get good, and then they broke up and all the teams got good last year. It's like Florida State and Miami, and I know there's Mario Cristobal, take a knee, but they are on, like, Florida State was obviously – really should have been a playoff team last year, except for an injury and, projections by the committee. But that is over. Florida State is rolling as a program right now. Absolutely rolling. They're not Bobby Bowden level yet, but Mike Norvell has them cooking. And Cristobal has Miami cooking. And it's not like the dream of the ACC was always, well, look, we're going to have Florida State and we're going to have Miami. We're going to have two top 10 programs and we are going to have a great football league and everyone else can come. And Clemson actually kind of stepped into that and became this great team. Like, it's not that dim on the football front. But I think Miami's got a case to be one of those four, where Virginia Tech maybe once did. But if you are Boston College, if you are these other schools, do you sit there and say, look, we're going to take half. We got to keep you. Do you look at what happened in the Big 12 where they didn't do that for Texas and Oklahoma, or you didn't do that for USC? And, you know, could the Pac-12 have averted everything if they just said, hey, we'll give USC a little bit more money because that LA market is just too important. Once we lose that, it's all going to come down. Are you better off agreeing to what is almost unthinkable, but has to be thinkable because otherwise you're left with what? I mean, if you're Syracuse and Boston College and some of these other programs, the only time you get a big crowd for your football games is generally when Clemson or Florida State show it, like one of these top teams. What are you going to have if they go? And do you want to just be the big, you know, maybe Big 12 light? Do you want to drop to fourth? So would you do this, looking at how it had worked out for everybody else, would you seed and say, we're going to take half money, you guys take more?
It's a fascinating question. It's a real dilemma there. I will say, Cristobal has turned on the burners on the stove, but he ain't cooking yet. Let me just say that. He's been a big disappointment. Boy, I mean,
if he doesn't cook this year with this roster,
then,
he better
then he's
cook.
Cooked. He's cooked. Cooked.
He better yes. cook. They better
cook
be good.
Or be cooked, I would say. Cook yeah. or be cooked for Cristobal this year.
You spend Miami people's money and it don't work out, they come looking for you. Yeah, I know that much about Miami. Don't spend their money and not cook.
Yeah, right. Right. So we'll see. I mean, they have compiled a roster. That's for damn sure. We'll see how the roster performs under Mario's leadership. But yeah, I mean, look, they kind of the underlying truth to all of the college sports situation, right, seems to be that there's basically 15 programs that make the most money and have the biggest value. And there's a lot of programs that are along for the ride with them. And you look at the Big Ten, you know, Purdue and Illinois and Minnesota have been along for the ride for a century plus. And we found out who was along for the ride in the Pac-12. And it's not hard to see who's along for the ride in the ACC. If you do remove the two football bell cows of Florida State and Clemson, and then you take the everything bell cow in North Carolina, then yeah. So you probably have to look pretty seriously if you are everyone else. Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh and Syracuse, Boston College and Louisville and Georgia Tech and so on and so forth, and say, what do we need to do to appease the people that other people would like to take and deconstruct the league? And if that means going further down the road of uneven revenue sharing, which they already started with the Success Initiative, right? That was the big talk last year with Florida State and Clemson. But do you have to go further? You know, it's really... It's a difficult, dicey thing because you're consigning yourself to second string status, but maybe that's what you need to do.
And just quickly before I get to Ross, some of that along for the ride is demographics. I mean, you're in Pullman, Washington. You can't be in LA. There's just the natural differences. Yeah. Go ahead, Ross.
Pat nailed a lot of it. I don't know. And I don't even know if uneven, if it's kind of too late. If the uneven distribution, if they, you know, expand upon it or whatever, the Success Initiative, I mean, all this stuff might be a little late kind of situation there. And also, as many will say, when you start the uneven distribution of wealth in a league, it usually doesn't work out. In the past, We've seen it kind of implode, and it's kind of a beginning of the end situation oftentimes.
I guess it's yeah, it's the alternative is didn't work out either. I don't know. I don't know if there is a solution. Yeah, I don't know if there's a solution, but for some of these schools, you know, now look, I think that if I had my way, we would have 7 or 8 leagues, major, like we would have more leagues. We're better with more leagues. And I think that, and especially if you can find a way to go back to the playoff and say, hey, we're going to get a bid. I mean, a football league that involves the other schools, scrap SMU and the Bay Area schools. But even if you lose Florida State and Miami and Clemson and North Carolina, you take the other schools in the ACC, it's a competitive football league. And I know you don't have the money necessarily. Certainly you don't have the straight line money to make that as competitive as the SEC and the Big Ten, but you aren't competitive with Clemson and Florida State now either. You aren't competitive with the SEC powers now anyway, if you're Virginia or you're Pitt or you're any, like those things, it's not going on now. That is a very competitive football team. And the one thing about college football and college basketball, there's too many good players. They cannot cap how good a team is just by saying these are the only teams that matter. Because as long as everyone, there's too many players. Some of these kids are going to say, I'm going here, and hey, that kid turned out to be better than someone else. And are they absolutely going to transfer? I don't know. But there's too many players. There's enough players for a lot of good teams, not just 30, 40, something like that. It's not like the NBA where you just sit there and say, here's the cutoff. And so you sit there and you go, you're the Sacramento Kings. And you say, hey, whatever the Lakers want, just keep us around. Just give us a seat at the table. Otherwise, we have a G League outpost.
No, not only, Dan, I want to just piggyback on that. You mentioned too many players. Not only are there too many players, but they're about to be a reduction in roster size, football roster as well. So that should, you would think, you know, the walk-ons that were getting the spot number 105 or 95 on a Power 5 team and potentially paid NIL are going to go to another school to be in the top 85 sort of thing. You hope that actually spreads out the talent from what's coming. So, there are too many of the 4 and 5 stars, and even those guys that we often talk about with like Michigan and those programs, the 3 stars. And then you're going to have a reduction here soon in roster spots in football that's going to help probably facilitate more the spreading out of talent.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, Dan, as far like I would rather see more competitive leagues and more competitive teams than further consolidation. And we should be able to spread out the players enough so that we have competitive teams across the country and across multiple leagues. But that's the way everybody seems to view this from a revenue production standpoint and a desirable property standpoint is going the other way. So I don't know. And generally speaking, what TV values tends to win.
It wins in these boardroom decisions, but I don't know that it wins on the field. I the collective wisdom of college athletics is something that is often wrong. It's almost tragically, we'll talk in a second about the House case, but like the reality is, I understand you want a salary cap. You want the most level, you want the NFL, right? They do everything they can to create this even league, scheduling, all the stuff they possibly can do. I get that is probably as good as it gets. But even then, you have guys going, yeah, man, I'm a free agent. I'm going to Miami. I'm not playing in Green Bay. Like, there's still certain realities. But in this deal, these schools in the ACC have never, that we would look at as the second tier, have never been able to compete with the top. The same way it's never been a deal for Boise State's never been able to steal a recruit. Actually, with NIL, maybe you can sometimes. There's still playing time. There's too many good players, and there's too many guys that are going to sit there and say, hey, man, I could be the starting quarterback and go get a degree at Boston College. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah, it's not Football Factory, but it, what an unbelievable thing that would be, right? And I can make some money up here. And I get to be this. It's good enough for Matt Ryan. It's good enough for a lot of people. And I could go pro here. The same thing. I live in Texas. Yeah, you know what? I really want to play at Baylor, or I want to play at TC. I don't want to have to go to Minnesota just because it's in the Big Ten. And so there's different things that come along. They've never been able to compete head up in recruiting. It's rarely happened. It's news when one of these schools gets a really good recruit. And I think they focus so much on what they can't do and not necessarily what they can. They go, oh, there's no way for us to compete if we're making $20 million less a year. I get that. I really do. But I don't think it's the death knell that it could be. The old Big East was a lot of fun. And I watched those schools in the Big East have a lot more fun with football when that's what they existed. Other than Louisville, maybe, because they ended up getting Lamar Jackson. But you used to watch those Thursday nights on ESPN, and Rutgers is storming the field, and there's a BC Virginia Tech game, and it's Sandman, and Pitts, and everybody's doing stuff. And it was exciting on their campus, and their fans were energized, and you were beaming out positive images. And then everybody went to the, when was the last time Rutgers had any fun? I mean, hey, you got my, what, these schools aren't having the fun that they once did. And so it's like in college like they all do this. Everyone's chasing the buck, but the people chasing the buck are trying to make the buck. And I like it was mid-major college basketball could be a lot of fun. And then they like, I got to leave. I can't stay in the Missouri Valley. Why? It's pretty good. You know? And like, oh, there's like this illusion. If we just get into this league, then it'll work. We're going to become Ohio State. You're not going to become Ohio State. It's not that simple. So I just think that there's a path here. If you sit there and split up and have more conferences, as long as there is a spot in the playoff or there's some reasonable access to the playoff, that's kind of what you got to. Once you're locked out of that, though, you're screwed. But this is where the ACC is. Very, very frightening times.
Yeah. I mean, is it the usual suspects, the line, the greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing the world he didn't exist. The greatest trick college administrators have ever played is convincing fans to root for money, root for revenue, instead of rooting for what is actually enjoyable for them.
It's true. Welcome to losing. Great. I never go to the games anymore. I don't wear my jersey. Playing,
yeah, no longer playing rival schools because you're on different league.
Yeah, I got, you know, that's how it goes. All right. Speaking of realignment fallout, the Pac-2, still the Pac-12 officially. Pac-2, maybe 12. I mean, like, I understand when you're like, listen, we're the Big Ten. We're going to keep our name. It's a big brand. We got 18. We're not going to change the Big 18. We're going to be the big. When you only have two, can you really claim? Like, you're not even close.
You're 1/6 of your off. Name.
You're not even close. Come on. Like, this is a bad math. You can't be like, get that math problem. Like, whatever your answer would be 2 as 12. Like, you're like, Jimmy, you might need to stay back in the second grade. Okay, 2 is not 12. You need another. I mean, you're not even close. You don't even have the number of digits right. Anyway, Oregon State and Washington, bless their hearts, they have a TV deal. They are going to be either on Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, or our favorite, the C-Dub.
Yeah. All
right. Check them out after the LIV tournament.
Mm-hmm.
The CW is taking games for Oregon State and Washington State. Now, the problem with this is it sounds good because everyone technically has the CW, but most of the stations will end up, like I'm thinking the CW in Cedar Rapids, Iowa will just show paid programming. This replay Caitlin Clark commercials or something. I don't know. Rather than pick up the game, but hey, they're getting games. My real question is, do they add Golden Angels University from the other college football drama on C-Dub, All-American. Jordan Baker throwing to Spencer James. I mean, that is popular. That will they will All-American Golden Age, the fortunes of Golden Angels University on All-American outdraw the Oregon State, Washington State games.
We could all actually do well to have somebody in our lives as dedicated to us as Dan is to that show on CW.
It's terrible. I blame my daughter. She got me into it and then she bailed on it. I almost quit when Billy Baker died. Spoiler alert. It's like four seasons ago. It's all hey, whatever. It's college football. What do I got?
Yeah.
I think I got a lot going on in my life. I'm a fan of a hockey team that's schizophrenic. I got nothing.
Thank you for at least your dedication to something on CW. I don't think I can be as dedicated to Oregon State and Washington State. I will say, like, when the release came across with the Pac-12 logo and the Pac-12, you know, like, I was like, oh, this is sad. Oh, no. Actually releasing this and, like, trying to get people excited? Come on now. I mean, I reiterate that I hope the Beavers and the Cougars do well and take as much money as they can and succeed and find a way. But that was a sad release when that came across.
It is. It was kind of a reminder, you know, of what happened a few months ago in the fall when everything kind of fell apart. The mentions on the tweet, the CW like tweeted out like a video and it's like, get ready for Pac-12 this fall on the CW. And then it flashes the logos of all of the Pac-12 schools. And it's two teams, you know, it's like one and then two and then the CW logo and the Pac-12 logo. And then it ends up going through some of the games. The mentions on the tweet are hysterical, absolutely hysterical. The memes are, I'll read one of them, but the memes are incredible. one of the replies is, I thought this was a satire account and it got funnier when I realized it wasn't. It's just amazing.
Didn't the release not even show football? Like, there's no video of the actual.
Yeah.
I saw didn't he? Like, it's one thing if you're like, hey, man, hard hitting college football coming to the CW and you show some Oregon State kid just hammering a guy and then an interception. Show some highlights. Like, even when they promote All American, which is fake, okay? The All American receiver, Spencer James, that actor looks like he's about 5'5", okay? Like, and still they show him making one handed catches. You know, it's all staged and they got the extras in one section, so it looks like the stadium sold out. Like, even they show football. They should have shown them. They should have taken the stock footage from that and been like, dude, is Golden Angels University real? I thought it was a fake school. I thought it was supposed to be USC. I didn't know. Instead, they don't even show that. It's like, it looked like an AV product from like the, isn't there? The Big Ten Network used to employ the kids on the campus to do like broadcasting. And then couldn't we get a student? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of talented students at Oregon State and Washington State. Come on, Pac-2.
Yeah, they probably had some footage cut of Cam Ward playing quarterback at Washington State.
Transferred.
No, never mind. He's gone. Oh, we had Damian Martinez from Oregon State. Oh, wait, no. We can't use that footage either. Yeah, we got no players left.
I would go with the Spencer James is in this league and a whole bunch of 14-year-old girls would watch in an effort to, like, at least your first week. They're like, where is he? He's so handsome. Where is he? Tell Jordan Baker to take his helmet off. Where is that guy? Maybe you convince some people. You get a bump. The advertisers don't know. I don't know. Anyway, they got a TV deal. It's one step from gas station TV. We're coming.
We are headed to pump five.
That joke is getting more and more real. Pump six, Oregon State versus Idaho. I think one of the games is like Idaho, isn't it?
Sure.
Oh, my goodness.
By the way,
Idaho State. Still, I'm sorry.
That's even worse.
Tune in at 3:30 PT, 6:30 Eastern on 8:31 for the Oregon State, Idaho State. There are affiliates. They're like, we're just going to do paid programming. Yeah. Yeah, by the Thighmaster.
I'm going through the replies still. I mean, it's just cracking me up, man. It's unbelievable. There's a video of a GIF of an old man sitting at a table, shirtless, looks kind of like homeless, and he's counting nickels on his desk, like 10 nickels on his desk. And the person wrote, "Athletic directors counting out the money this will bring into their programs." It's something. It's something.
Lord, all right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, Ross, developments in the House case. The House case is the big lawsuit from attorney Jeffrey Kessler. We've talked about it. It is the one that will really push the domino of employment of players and everything. This is a big, big case. I know there's a lot of cases. We do not want to get in the weeds here. We've gotten in the weeds enough. We don't need numbers. We don't need this or that. I thought that the two interesting things was if there is a settlement paper, you can describe it, but that it requires the players to also advocate to Congress that they get an antitrust exemption for college sports. And then everything else to me is and they want to have an investigative body that will crack down on fake NIL, which is basically collectives. It's funny because these people's unwillingness to see that the finish line was going to be and to try to create guardrails when there should never have been one has now created collectives that they now have to guardrail again. Like that, like they're going and they're chasing their own tail here. They created the problem they're now trying to solve with some expensive and highly fruitless investigative thing. Those are the two most interesting things. The other most interesting is this proposal came out and every lawyer I know texted me and said, this doesn't stand a freaking chance. So without giving the detail, too many details, where do we stand on this and why do they think this is going to work? I assume they have lawyers also. I don't know.
Yeah, the portion of this memo that went to various general counsels and presidents in power conference leagues, the portion of it, as you noted, that's probably most interesting and kind of shocking, is that the plaintiffs, according to this, have agreed as part of the proposed settlement to cooperate with the NCAA's congressional lobbying effort seeking an antitrust exemption. It's hard to believe. I had to read that one multiple times on the document. So I don't know how that would work. I don't exactly know why the plaintiffs would agree to that. And it's hard to believe that the two leading attorneys in this, Jeffrey Kessler and Steve Berman, will now work in support of the NCAA's lobbying effort after years of working against them, specifically working against them. Steve Berman told me over the weekend that he literally went to Capitol Hill to work against the opposite of what Charlie Baker was working for. And now, apparently, according to this, they will agree to cooperate. I think the other thing,
a lot
thing
of money
note,
in this settlement now. A lot of money, yeah, a lot of billable
right.
hours
so
get built.
That's right.
They have not
that's
gotten right. any Two. Money back on this settlement. So you want to settle if you're an attorney, if that means you got to go talk to a senator or two. Hey, man.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so.
On your way
maybe
to Cancun.
So. And I think the other thing, some of the other things that are interesting that are, you know, non-monetary or things that weren't publicized previously is the settlement. It does allow a shift into some kind of employment model, and it says specifically with collective bargaining, which we talked about collective bargaining quite a bit on this show, and how it is probably the end result of all this. At the end of the road is some kind of collective bargaining. So that was quite interesting. And then there's the last part that you mentioned, right? Is it the document says under the proposed settlement terms, the court will quote reaffirm the NCAA's remaining compensation rules, and that includes booster pay for what they term not true NIL, and schools will have an economic incentive. So I assume some kind of financial incentive to bring collectives in-house. So the whole goal of this settlement, part of the goal, is to eliminate collectives. But as you said, Dan, you know, a lot of attorneys reach out to me as well. A lot of folks in the collective world saying that this probably won't, this was not going to fly. This doesn't make any sense. And yeah, I don't have a law degree, so I have no idea how it would work, but certainly those are some of the interesting concepts that answer some of the big questions. I think there are a few big questions here. One of them being, how do you enforce the collective space? Will it continue to be the Wild West? And this is their answer, at least in this memo.
Yeah. Great job getting the memo. My biggest initial question from this, beyond the logistics that you guys are talking about, is there's a two. The memo is to some people. Who is it from? Who wrote the memo? Whose document is this? Do you know?
Come on.
We're revealing
sources, Pat.
Sources. Is it NCAA generated? Is it the SEC's attorneys? Is it somebody like, you know, that's what I want to know. This reads much as a take the deal memo.
Right.
You don't have to answer that question. Pat does not deserve the truth. I want the truth.
The memo is pretty clearly encourages settlement, right? Encourages the people who might see it, which I think were administrators, power conference administrators and presidents and general counsels. I think it encourages them to into a settlement. And it comes at certainly a timely stretch here, where over the next week and a half, presidents will meet to potentially adopt this. So they kind of sent this out. Where it comes from, I think our attorneys working on the case, the general count from the power conferences and from the NCAA. I think that's where it's originally. You can just tell how the way it's written that it was derived from counsel, from power conference councils in NCAA council.
To you guys' point, like if I would say this, if the NCAA can pull this off and the power conferences to get this as the settlement and get players, athletes to lobby Congress on their behalf and actually still have some potential rules, then I'd say they've come out of this okay.
And take a 20%, 21% revenue share?
Right.
Woo.
No.
They pulled a fast one there. That is a huge
trick. Say this, and I will go back. Was it early December when Charlie Baker trotted out the first idea, kind of, and it's evolved significantly since then, but I think it was pretty significant of him to get the ball rolling of, hey, we really have to actually do something different here. We are not going to win in court, and we have got to rethink how this is all going to work. And I think he did a much better job than any other NCAA president in history has done of getting out in front of change and trying to get people prepped for change, and now we're seeing change coming.
Yeah, I at the time of Charlie Baker's proposal in December, obviously we know now, you know, this has been going on for negotiations in the House settlement, been going on for about 9 months, so last August. And at the time in December when he released that, obviously they were right in the thick of things. And the worry from many, including several commissioners who expressed it publicly, including Greg Sankey, was that it would negatively impact the litigation talks. And I remember asking Charlie Baker in January at the NCAA convention in Phoenix how he felt about the possibility of this impacting litigation. And he basically gave a, you know, a verbal shrug. He didn't think it would. And if you look at the settlement and see the terms, it doesn't necessarily look like it impacted much at all. It's honestly fairly similar to what he proposed. I don't know that it really impacted things all that much.
Pat trying to get Ross's sources.
Yeah. That's right.
That's really where this.
Went. I'm reading the story as a consumer of the news, and I'm like, well, all right, whose memo? Whose document is it?
Yeah,
that's my only question.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Ross did a good job not answering it. He did. He said, you know, general counsel's lawyer. So
it's clearly an attorney. Yeah. Document.
Yes.
This is something I obviously didn't write in the story, but stamped throughout the document, it says privileged and confidential.
There you go.
So, didn't seem to stop the dissemination of the document.
All right. There was a hire in college basketball. Very interesting one this week. Doug Gottlieb, who most know from his broadcasting career, both on television and his he has a radio show at Fox Sports Radio, daily radio show, 2 hours a day. He's been on ESPN. He's a famous player. He played at Oklahoma State. He was hired to be the new head basketball coach at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, which is in the Horizon League and is a, you know, it's a competitive basketball league. It's mid-major, but it is, it's not, this isn't Division III. This is, you know, they've had some really good teams, Dick Bennett through the years. Horizon's produced a lot of good teams. He got hired late because Sonny Wicks, who came in last year, took over a three-win team, won 18. He got hired at Wyoming. So they're looking for a coach. They almost hired Doug a year ago, but he didn't want to move and didn't work out. Sonny Wicks is a great hire, obviously. His daughters are finishing high school out in California, all that. But anyway, he is the new head coach at Wisconsin Green Bay, which is interesting, familiar name. He has been coaching AAU ball. He coaches teams in Israel sometimes. His family is all coaches. His dad's a legendary coach. You know, it's been around the game. So interesting hire. What makes it more interesting is he's not giving up his daily radio show. He is going to continue to do a 2-hour national radio show on Fox Sports Radio and then a daily podcast after, which is, you know, about an hour. And he's going to have two jobs. The gig economy has hit college basketball. He's going to have two jobs. He has a daily radio show, basically 3 hours a day. He's going to be talking. Rest of the time, he is recruiting, coaching, scouting, whatever the heck you got to do to be the Green Bay basketball coach. He has said, I listened to him on Inside Wisconsin, a podcast, and he was on for a while. And Doug, you know, I think you know Doug. I know Doug. He is a very colorful he's an excellent broadcaster. He's very interesting. He's charismatic. I think, like, if you were just hiring him and saying this guy on the recruiting trail sitting in a living room talking this, that, and his AAU ties, pretty interesting hire. Not a coaching experience per se, but it's Green Bay basketball. I think it's a pretty good hire. The fascinating part is the radio thing. He's like, hey, look, I've had 8 jobs forever. I've had a daily radio show and tried to run an AAU program. And then I do TV on the weekends. And then I got to jump over here. He was a consultant at Oklahoma State last year. All the different things. This guy is just, Doug Gottlieb, I think, wakes up and like jumps out of bed and just runs the whole day. Like, he's just a sprinter. So, hey, I only got 2. I can do this. It really doesn't take much to do a radio show, which is, we had a weekly national radio show, you and I, Pat. Now we put no effort into that probably, but we had one. I don't know. Can you do both? That's what's fascinating to me. I think Doug Gottlieb is a basketball coach hire for Green Bay. Yeah, not bad. What the heck? Give it a shot, especially at this point of the year. But also doing the job, fascinating. Can he do it?
I don't know, but if he does it and does it well and succeeds, he's the gateway drug for us, and then we can take over. Let's take over like New England United.
Yeah,
You know, we'll do that and do the pod.
You forgot the part about where he knows how to coach basketball.
Well, theoretically. Yeah,
theoretically. Yeah. Little bit more experience than
yeah. But if he does it, if he succeeds, yes, we're all coming for your coaching jobs. No, I would have significant doubts about this. I did look it up because I was like, has anybody ever done this? And I thought of Tom Brennan, the great coach at Vermont.
Oh, right.
You know, who upset Syracuse in the NCAA tournament once, you know, had a really great run there. Brennan was co-hosted a morning show, Burlington, Vermont, Corman the coach for like 9 years, of which about the last, so included like the last 6 or 7 of his coaching career. But by then, I will say, Tom Brennan was established as a coach, all right? He had already proved he could win. He was an institution there. If I'm Doug Gottlieb trying to get up and running in my first college coaching job and I'm trying to do radio, that might be biting off a lot. We'll see. Again, to your point, full of energy, full of enthusiasm, full of optimism, downright cocky, you might even say. He will absolutely think he can do both jobs. We'll see if he can do it.
Yeah, a lot of coaches do not believe he can do both jobs.
Yeah, right.
It's definitely what's a lot of people going, that's crazy.
Especially,
not going to work.
Yeah, in the current portal era where it's like you're constantly shuffling rosters and looking for players and losing players and getting players. All I hear is how much harder the job is now, and you're going to do it part-time?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I will say, like, I mean, it's great promotion for the program, right? That said, what if you're on, you lost five straight games. Like, you got to come on, do the rate. Most coaches are inconsolable after a let's say, and, you know, Doug, if you're listening, I'm sorry to bring up this hypothetical. Let's say you get, you know, you lose by 30 points on Tuesday night, and Wednesday you got to go on the show and talk about, you know, is Dak Prescott the answer for, like, long-term or the Cowboys? It's just such a weird, like, how do you watch the games on Sunday? Do you watch? You just don't watch football? Like, most coaches don't have time for anything. They live in these bubbles. So I'm now that I forgot about Brennan up in Burlington. Gottlieb said something about Jimmy Valvano once had a nightly talk show and he would actually fly to New York to tape it or something. How did that work? Why? I don't know. But how long did that last? That was also 1980s, right? I mean, it's a totally different ballgame. The coaches that you talk to, and certainly Doug Gottlieb understands all this, they say your day, you think this is what you're doing in the day, and then five things happen that are, and you, by the end of the day, you're out.
Yeah.
Brennan was doing a morning show.
Yes.
I was on that show a few times.
I was too.
So at 6 a.m., you could probably do it. You could also have the other, the Corman, right? It was Corman.
Yeah.
You could have the second guy miss.
Right.
This is the Doug Gottlieb show.
Yeah.
And you're not doing Burlington, Vermont local radio where I don't know, what do they talk about up there?
I mean, you know what? Probably in that
the foliage.
Day, yeah.
What are we talking about?
Brennan and the Corm would probably just pick up the newspaper in the morning, look at it and say, okay, here's three stories we can talk about and check the maple syrup levels. You know, are we producing
maple
syrup
futures?
Not? Yeah.
Yeah. Good foliage. Hey, yeah. Might ski. That might snow over at Killington. What are we doing? I don't know. I'm just absolutely fascinated by this.
Yeah.
I love it. It could work. I mean, some people are really upset. It's like, dude, it's Green Bay basketball.
Yeah, right. I mean,
let's.
Yeah, they've had like
innocent people will not die if the Phoenix have a struggle for a year or two. Yeah. Let us go get another coach.
That program has struggled a lot lately. So, like last year, Sundance Wicks, their coach, he was the big sensation. That's why he's no longer their coach. But it does give Gottlieb the opportunity, as you said, if you're like, you just get drilled the night before to come on and do what Lou Holtz once did when you'd have these coaches would have their own like TV shows that they would tape usually on Sunday after the games on Saturday. Holtz, when he was at Arkansas, they lost some game badly and he comes on and says, "Welcome to the Lou Holtz show. Unfortunately, I'm Lou Holtz." Because they had just gotten crushed the day before. So Gottlieb could have the opportunity to use that line.
Can he rant against the media? This is one of Coach's favorite things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Can college basketball coaches now say all the media is a bunch of idiots? You don't know the game? Well, we got a coach now. One of our guys. One of our guys is taking over your job.
That's
you
right.
Guys are always coming down taking our jobs.
Yep. Now we're coming for
right?
you. Like
the coaches come and taking our jobs. Now we're taking one back.
New England United, we're coming to take it.
Took one back. Go media. Go Gottlieb. UWGB. I don't know. We'll be watching and listening, Doug. Good luck to you. Fascinating intervention. All right, I got to end with this. I don't know if you heard, but troubled times at the Red Lobster.
Uh-oh.
Red Lobster restaurants.
Yeah.
99 stores around the country are shutting down.
Oh.
They're having struggles. RIP the Cheddar Bay Biscuit. Fan favorite at the Red Lobster. But one of their problems, you know, restaurants come, they come, they go. These things happen, right? Brands get old, chains. Yeah. It's very hard to keep it going. Red Lobster has served us all well, very through the years.
They somehow convinced me when I was a kid that it was pretty fancy.
It was fancy back then, though,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they'd have the live lobsters up front. Right. I mean, it's like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, there weren't a lot of Red Lobsters where I don't know if there are any in South Shore, Massachusetts.
You guys didn't need the mass chain lobster joints.
No. I once caught a lobster on a fishing pole. That's really? My favorite lobster. Really? Yeah, hooked right in its claw. So, yeah, the Red Lobster. But anyway, Red Lobster will do you. But one of their problems was... they came up with this idea for the endless shrimp.
Yeah.
All you can eat shrimp. And for $20, you could get all you could eat of two types of shrimp. It was either the garlic shrimp scampi. All you can eat garlic shrimp scampi. God bless you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Coconut shrimp.
Yeah.
Shrimp linguine Alfredo.
Yeah.
Walt's favorite shrimp. I'm not sure what that is.
Who's Walt?
And then the garlic grilled. Who's Walt? I don't know, but I'll research it. Garlic grilled shrimp skewer. So they're handing out the garlic. You also got a basket of the aforementioned Cheddar Bay biscuits and a side, all for $20. Pretty good deal. So they used to use that as like a little, you know, bring people in kind of thing. And they put it on the full menu, permanent menu. This deal. And America, no fools. We're not fools. People flocked to the Red Lobster and everyone was getting the endless shrimp. And Red Lobster's parent group, Thai Union Group, said they lost about $20 million in 2023. And one of the big reasons was the endless shrimp deal.
Mm.
It was too cheap.
Mm.
The American Sumer damn near bankrupted Red Lobster. We wanted to boost our traffic and it didn't work, the CFO said to Restaurant Business Magazine. We want to keep it on the menu. Of course, we needed to be much more careful regarding what the entry points, what the price point we were offering this promotion. So the endless shrimp buffet there, endless shrimp. A bunch of people were just going in there and literally ate Red Lobster out of business.
Well, that's the American way. You put endless in front of something and people are going to go. People will indulge. They will indulge to excess, I'm sure. But here's a question. Like, can't you just raise the price? Instead of making it 20, make it $24.99 and then you make it $29.99?
It's 25 now, but the losses they have taken down, they can't come back from. Wow. 20 million. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. This is what they're saying.
Wow.
They're too trying,
good a deal.
They're considering bankruptcy. I mean, like the shrimp, we bankrupted by shrimp. We were expecting an increase of 20% in customer traffic. The actual number was 40%. I had no idea about this.
Whoa. Me neither.
The Thai Union has lost $530 million on their initial investment.
Dang.
They blame COVID. Everyone blames COVID-19.
Yeah, of course.
But 40%. So I think you assume they come in and they come with like bring a couple other people and then you order some drinks where you make some money. And
yeah.
Right, the other people order something else. Nah.
Wow.
Like it was just a lineup of just shrimp gougers, just shoveling shrimp. And now their beloved Red Lobster is shuttered.
That's it.
I mean, I'm kind of pissed at the shrimp people.
The shrimp people were too greedy, took too much of their shrimp. And now look, now you got no shrimp. That's the problem. You go from getting a good deal on shrimp. You got no shrimp now.
Bankrupted by shrimp.
Tough
garlic
line.
Shrimp.
Tough line on the tombstone.
Yeah. Let me see what Walt's favorite shrimp.
Yeah, who the hell's Walt?
Is that would be popular then. That is just basically a fried shrimp with cocktail sauce.
Okay.
That's probably what went hard. They went hard to the paint on that one. it's so funny. I'm looking on the Red Lobster Walls and they have a reminder. A 2000 calorie per day diet is used. Like if you're going for the all you can eat endless shrimp, fried shrimp, I don't think the 2000 calorie limit is really in the back of those guys' heads.
Not a concern.
No, not really. also, just finally, I have a Cold Stone Creamery source.
Oh, okay.
A whistleblower, if you will.
Oh.
Sources. If you call last episode, we discussed how there's no pistachios allegedly in the pistachio. My source is claiming there's no pecan in the butter pecan.
Whoa. Uh-oh. We have widespread nut fraud.
I cannot confirm or deny, but that's my big ice cream.
Yeah. Widespread nut fraud. This is not good.
Yeah. Deep ice cream, I guess we'll call it. Cold Stone Creamery. So they got all sorts of it's tough in the restaurant business.
Right now. Is. It is.
It is tough. Tough out there.
Shrimp shortages and nut fakery.
Yeah. Money shortages. They got no shrimp.
Yeah.
They ain't got no money. I didn't know there was a lineup. Can you imagine these guys just line up? Like, I don't know. It's lined up to eat shrimp all night. Who knew?
People
sit there for hours. Yeah. I always wondered how that worked, right? Like, how does Golden Corral make that work?
Right. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, you get people that, you know, hit the booth at 5 p.m. and they don't leave till 8 because they're just shoveling in shrimp. Is that the deal? I mean,
yeah, I think there was a Curb Your Enthusiasm about this. Too many plates.
I'm sure. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Too many plates. They were banned from the all you can eat. everything comes back to Curb. All right, that's our show. We'll be back next week with more. We got all sorts of stuff going on. A lot happening. We'll see if all our conferences are still currently aligned. You never know. Continue to share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We appreciate you. And have a good weekend. Talk to you later.